Welcome to the Sustainable Nano Podcast. I'm Miriam Krauss, and for today's episode, we have an interview with Professor Robert Hamers from the University of Wisconsin, talking about something that, at first glance, doesn't seem to have anything to do with nanotechnology. Glaciers. If you listened to our very first episode, you may recognize Bob's voice. He's the director of the Center for Sustainable Nanotechnology, which is the research center that actually produces this podcast. He's an expert on nanotechnology and battery materials, among other things, but recently he had an experience that reminds us how science at the nanoscale affects everything around us, including why glacier ice sometimes looks blue. Here's our conversation. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk about glaciers for a few minutes. So how did you get interested in glaciers in the first place? You took a trip to Alaska this summer, right?
Yeah, that's right. My family and I took a few days to visit around Alaska. We went up to Denali and drove down to the Kenai Peninsula down in the southern part, where a lot of the big glacier fields are.
Awesome. And what did you see that kind of piqued your interest?
Well, one of the cool things we did while we were there was we took this boat trip that took us out into the ocean, and then we went into these little fjords. You know, basically the glaciers from the Harding ice fields kind of, they're almost like toothpaste. They squeeze under this enormous pressure, and they squeeze through this, they squeeze basically through the valleys between the mountains, and eventually this kind of toothpaste that's moving some very slow amount, like a few inches per day, but it squeezes out toward the ocean, and then then when it gets to the ocean, there are these large chunks of the glacier that continually fall off, so that even though the glacier is moving toward the ocean, because of the parts that are melting, the net motion is actually kind of backwards. So it's pushing forward and melting at the same time. So people talk about the glaciers retreating, but really what you have is a glacier is continually advancing, but because it's melting at the same time, the front of it is melting, and if the front is melting faster than it is advancing, then the net result is a retreat of the glacier. And that's pretty impressive seeing it there. There were markings of where the glaciers have been for the last several hundred years along the trail that we were on, and it was pretty remarkable how much the glaciers have retreated. So the coolest thing for me in seeing the glacier was, first of all, I certainly expected the glaciers to be very big, so that was not a surprise. But the thing that really surprised me was this gorgeous blue color that they have. And it's almost kind of a cyan, or, you know, it's basically what you might call an aqua color. And, you know, people often talk about water being blue, and oftentimes, though, if you're in a swimming pool or something, well, you've got the bottom of the swimming pool painted blue, and you've got the reflection from the blue sky. So it's really hard to know if any of this, you know, what the blue color comes from. But on the glacier, it was pretty impressive that this blue was visually striking, and also striking was the fact that it wasn't blue everywhere. And so that was one of the clues I used to say, well, is this just like reflection from the sky or some other phenomenon? But it was very clear there were regions that were very blue and regions that were not very blue. So it just really piqued my interest to understand what all this color was from.
Yeah. So why is that? What's going on there?
Yeah. Well, let's see. You know, the color of the blue sky comes from the fact that there are these little tiny density fluctuations in the air. And these little density fluctuations scatter light of different colors differently. So we see the blue sky because blue light gets scattered to the side a little more. So when the sun is in where it is most of the day, the sky looks blue. And then at sunset and sunrise, it appears more red-orange. So I thought that this is called Rayleigh scattering. So I had thought originally that might be responsible for the blue color of the glacier. So then I did some reading and found that it's really a completely different phenomenon that arises from something called overtone vibrations. And the easiest analogy I can make is to a musical instrument. So a musical instrument like a violin, the I think it's middle A is at something like 440 hertz.
I'll interrupt here and play a couple examples so you can actually hear what Bob is talking about. First, here's the A Bob mentioned, but as a what we call a pure tone. It's exactly a 440 hertz vibration. It's generated by the computer, and you're not hearing any other frequencies, just 440 hertz.
When someone plays a musical instrument and plays a particular note, you hear the fundamental, but you also hear these overtones. And the overtones are basically due to vibrations of the string at multiples of the original frequency. So 440 is the fundamental, then there's 880, and there would be, you know, 3 times 440, and 4 times 440.
Now, when you add these overtones together, you get something interesting. All of a sudden, it starts sounding less like the computer-generated tones that it is, and a little more like maybe a reedy musical instrument. Okay, I admit I'm not going to want to listen to any music that's played like that anytime soon, but here's an example of the real thing, a violin playing A440 with all of its overtones. So that's overtones. Now let's let Bob get back to explaining what all this has to do with glaciers.
And so in the glacier you have water molecules. The water's got 2 hydrogens and 1 oxygen. And the water molecule has vibrations too, just like the vibrations of a stringed instrument. With a water molecule, they're much higher in frequency because the water molecule is really small compared with the size of a violin or other stringed instrument. But the same phenomenon basically occurs, that you can, when light comes in, it can interact with the water molecule at its fundamental vibrational frequency. And if it does, then that light will be absorbed and will basically be gone. But the fundamental frequency for water is in the infrared region of the spectrum where we can't see it. But the overtones, and in particular the 4th and 5th overtones of that OH vibration, happen to fall in the edge of the red part of the spectrum. And so basically the mechanism for the blue color of the glacier is that sunlight comes in, and sunlight, of course, has all different colors in it. But as that sunlight enters the glacier, maybe from the top or maybe from the side, and propagates through the glacier, that red part of the spectrum becomes absorbed. And then when it finally comes out through the side of the glacier, which is what I was looking at, it has this beautiful blue appearance. If you take white light and you take away red, you basically get cyan, which is kind of a bluish green, and that's essentially the color that the glacier itself was. And then it's not that color uniformly, because there's also snow and ice, or snow present on the surface. And so the blue color really requires the ice be nice and crystalline so that light can basically pass through it and be absorbed and not be scattered off to the side. And so when you have snow on the glacier, that snow, basically, just like the snow that we usually see around here in Wisconsin during the winter, that snow is white because it's basically just scattering the sunlight. So if you have a glacier that's partially covered with snow and the rest of it you're seeing this bare, really compressed ice, the snow will appear white and the ice will appear blue.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, so really awesome colors.
Yeah. So can you go a little, just to explain a little further again, then how come when we just like have an ice cube from our freezer, you know, that's crystalline, but why doesn't that look blue?
So this absorption isn't very strong. It's not easy for light to excite these 4th and 5th overtone vibrations. So the light really has to penetrate through a long region of ice in order to develop a noticeable color. So if you just take a nice ice cube out of the freezer, even if it's nice and transparent or, you know, basically clear colored, you're not going to see the blue color. You're not going to see it until that length, you know, unless you had some giant ice cube that was like 20 feet in size, you'd not be able to detect the blue color because it's just not a very strong enough effect. But, you know, something like a glacier, because it's so enormous, the colors really do become quite intense.
And the fact that you can see it from the side, so you know this blue is actually coming from the glacier and not just reflecting from the sky.
Right, exactly.
Also a difference between, yeah.
Yep.
Awesome. So now, how do we somehow bring this back around to nanotechnology? Let's see. So the blue, red light is being absorbed and blue light is being transmitted as far as the sunlight passing through the glacier.
Right.
And the visible spectrum is like 400 to 700 nanometers, right?
Right.
So how does that relate to nanoparticles?
So we know that white light is composed of all different colors that we visually see. So the visible region of the spectrum goes from about 400 nanometers wavelength up to about 700 nanometers, with 400 nanometers corresponding to deep violet and 700 nanometers corresponding to deep red. And then on either side of that, there's the ultraviolet spectrum, which is all wavelengths less than 400, and then also the infrared, which is colors beyond or wavelengths longer than 700 that our eyes can't see. So you know, compared to the size of say a water molecule. A water molecule is about roughly a tenth of a nanometer in size, depending on exactly how you measure it. A couple tenths of a nanometer. So the wavelength of light is still many times longer than the dimension of an atom. We think about molecules as having lengths that are typically on the order of a few nanometers to maybe tens of nanometers. For a largish molecule, like a protein, for example, would typically be some few nanometers up to maybe 10 nanometers in size. So light is much longer than the dimensions of all of these objects. But it's still it's still far smaller than the eye can see.
Right, yes. And I was just thinking it's kind of comparable to, like, you know, we interact with, like, radio waves all the time. If we listen to the radio in our car or something, you know, those are, like, meter scale wavelength, right? And they're interacting with objects that are much smaller than them. So I guess that people might be able to get that kind of as an analogy. So then the nanotechnology is working with dealing with particles that are on the, like, less than 100 nanometer scale. So again, still much bigger than these molecules, but actually smaller than the wavelengths that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair to say?
Yep.
Okay. Cool.
So I brought out the idea that in order to really see this blue color, the ice has to be very, very crystalline over long dimensions. And that's in part because when you have something like snow or not very high quality ice, you have a lot of fluctuations in the density and the properties on a wavelength corresponding roughly to the wavelength of light. And so when you have a material and it has little fluctuations on the scale of the wavelength of light, then it tends to have the effect of scattering the light sideways. So that's what happens with snow, for example. Snow crystals can be big, but they can also be small. And the white color of the snow comes from the fact that it is scattering the light sideways into your eyes. So if you have a not very high quality ice and it has all these little density fluctuations in it, then it will appear more of a white. Like if you take the ice from your freezer and you crack it, it will usually appear white, not blue.
And not even clear.
Yeah, that's right. And so in order to see this blue color, you need ice that is really very, very crystalline ice. And the best way of getting that is to let Mother Nature compress this ice under a glacier for, I don't know, hundreds or thousands or maybe even 10,000 years, that this ice might have been under pressure from the top of the glacier down. And over that long period of time, the ice can really form these beautiful, very, very nicely ordered crystalline ice that gives rise to this beautiful blue color.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you so much. I will, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about this.
All right. No problem.
Okay. That's it for this episode of the Sustainable Nano Podcast. Thanks so much to Dr. Hamers for doing our interview this week. Thanks, as always, to the National Science Foundation, whose grant supports the Center for Sustainable Nanotechnology. But, of course, don't blame the NSF if you don't like what you hear. All opinions and comments are those of the speakers. Our music is by Ketsa, and I apologize, I realized I've been mispronouncing that name since the very first episode. So music, again, that you hear is by Ketsa, K-E-T-S-A, which we found at thefreemusicarchive.org. For more Sustainable Nano, check out our blog at sustainable-nano.com, or get in touch with us on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Pinterest at Sustainable Nano. You can find show notes for this and other episodes of the podcast at sustainable-nano.com/podcast. And if you like the show, you can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. We'd love it if you'd leave a review. That'll help other people find the show. Finally, our exciting news for this week is that we've been picked up by the National Science Foundation's Science 360 Radio. If you're not familiar with Science 360 Radio, I definitely recommend checking it out. It's an amazing collection of science podcasts, all kinds of different topics on different areas of science. We're on the same page as Star Talk with Neil deGrasse Tyson on their list, you know, because both Sustainable Nano and Star Talk start with S, but we're very proud about that. Anyway. So check out science360.gov/radio to learn more. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.